All right, welcome all. I'm going to start on time tonight. Not that we don't usually start on time. There's a lot to cover. We probably won't get through all the slides. This is a combination talk where I took my detoxification talk, combined it with the weight loss talk. Both of those ran at least an hour and a half each, so this is going to be a party. Everybody knows I can speak fast enough. It's just you won't be able to understand me. Not that you ever do. We're going with certain premises. Yeah, exactly. And so I'm Dr. Gary Forsman. And it was really interesting because today I was in and I was kind of sitting next to Miranda trying to go in over the talk. And we got the typical kind of new patient call, which is, now, is he really an MD? Because if you do this stuff, you really can't be an MD. It was one of those things where I was like thinking about how funny that is. Now, it's true because when I was thinking about this question, there's this one egoic side of myself, which is, damn right, I'm an MD, you know. You know. But there was this other side, which is this exactly what I lecture on. MDs are dispensers of drugs and surgery. And I'm not dispensing drugs and surgery, so they shouldn't think I'm an MD. It's a really fascinating position I've put myself in. I am an MD, University of Florida. I am fellowship trained and board certified in internal medicine and anti-aging and metabolic, regenerative, and functional medicine. So I have quite a few certifications. I love looking into things. And I was just telling Phil, who also comes here from Woodhaven and Over Center to help record our talks for posterity's sake, is that I'm much more interested in the theoretical stuff behind this, why we socially condition ourselves to have the problems that we do. And that's what I'm most interested in medicine, looking at it from a more global perspective. So and when I do a talk like this, I'm doing it a lot for myself. I was going through my weight loss talk and I knew all the slides were there. I put them together, but it's like, damn, this is impressive why we do this. So these talks are available on the website. The PowerPoint presentations are available. I really encourage you to use our website as a source for information and a world of misinformation. And so ask questions as we go along. I'm going to start with the basics of detoxification, more about why we do it, a little bit about how to do it. We have staff galore and a whole facility to help you meet your detoxification needs. Then we're going to go into from detoxification to weight loss because these are the subjects of the new year. Everybody is coming in, do I do a detox now? Yes. Should I lose some weight? Well, if you need to. You know, I mean, it's a good time to set into those things. And so our talk tonight, this, and I call it Path to Metabolic Health. Detoxification is where we're starting at. What you need to know is every system of healing says that detoxification is something we should do, except for Western medicine, which focuses on the treatment of disease. Okay, so why does everybody say this? And so that's why we're going to go on. So toxicity. Now, toxicity is defined by the degree of or harm of a substance caused by to your biological organism. Any substance, even water, can become toxic at a certain dosage. We all know that what you've heard me say, all medicines are poisons, it's just a matter of the dosage. So every medicine we take is a toxin by definition. Why do I say that? The father of pharmacology said that. Okay, so it's a basic understanding that if you take medicines, you're poisoning your system. And should I help my body if I'm poisoning my system? Sounds like a pretty good idea. The more I do it, the longer I do it, better idea. This water. There's a classic saying, the solution to pollution is dilution. And if there's any one part of helping you with detoxification, drink more water. And whether it's Pellegrino, which I have no stock in, or whatever you will drink, okay, drink more water. It is the best detoxification thing you can do. That classic, take half your body weight in pounds and ounces of water a day is a good general rule to start with. Okay, you will not get toxic at that dosage of water, obviously. All right, but anything can become toxic, so you have to look at yourself. Have I seen people drink so much water that they flushed out the gradient of their kidney and its ability to detoxify themselves? I have seen that. It's fairly uncommon, but it is possible. I like this cute little guy, so I just put him in here. I only put this here as a reminder. This is not a talk on how to do alcohol detoxification. If you have an alcohol problem and need to go to a rehab center, drug problems, whatever else, not what tonight is about, okay? Tonight is about what natural physicians talk about, and this is, you know, the kind of terminology we use, but it's good to know this terminology. An exotoxin is anything entering your body that causes toxicity. Endotoxins are things that are already there within your GI tract, pathogenic bacteria and yeasts and things, but anything stored in your fat. Okay, so now, endotoxemia, meaning the toxins present within our fats, why detoxification is an important part of weight loss as well, is multiple studies show when the rate-limiting effects of losing weight is a reduction in your basal metabolic rate. That reduction in basal metabolic rate directly correlates with your toxicity level. Now, what that means is you lose weight, toxins get flushed into your body, and if your body can't handle them, it slows your metabolism as basically a response to a chronic stress. So do we have to detox as part of losing weight? Yes. We don't do it for that reason, though. I want to be really clear. It is a part of your health. That's what detoxification is about. And so this part here is so, so important. Okay. We talk, even when we talk the fatigue talk, self-critical perfectionism is being one of the main things that causes fatigue and stress in our body. So another key source for us human beings of toxicity is our own thought processes and how much they affect this holy trinity, the spirit, mind, body. Because believe it or not, people still ask today, is there a mind-body connection? And is spirit, mind, it's so sad that we're even asking the question, let alone that we don't know the answer to that. If you're asking that question, then experience self, okay? And this disease of chronic stress that is part of our world system is probably the most important factor in unhealthiness, okay? And so on that order, when we do the next talks, I'm focusing mainly on stress management, which is one of the things that most people do, I'd say, least successfully, okay? Symptoms of toxicity, the fact that you're toxic, you're not dead yet. If you're not alive, you'll need a decomposition. I'm just playing with people. If you're in a human body, according to every system, you are getting toxic, okay? So since you're all breathing and you're here today, you are accumulating toxicity. So none of us reach any of these criteria in health because we're always exposed to things, stressors, impure foods, impure air, etc. These are the symptoms of toxicity, okay? Fatigue, feeling out of sync, achy, bad breath, skin disturbances, digestive disturbances, sleep disruption, weight gain, and this is too much, too little, weight gain, weight loss. I don't feel good. I don't feel right. I'm out of sync with something. These are the symptoms that are the dis-ease that precedes disease. This is where there is nothing wrong with you according to your lab test. Now, remember what I was saying earlier. The big course for us MDs, pathophysiology, is based upon you having a disease for us to diagnose, okay? And that really is, you know, that's the case, that is the course you want to ace more than anything else in medical school. And so, but you do need to hear that. What we're trained is the recognition of disease. So, when we look at, I just do, hey, you know, cutting in. It says, hey, you know, cutting in. This, you know, I look at this and I think of the fast food lanes and all these other things and how we're all in a rush to get to this place. So it's just a little reminder to me in terms of our talks and things is that most of us are doing so many things we just think are normal. Everybody else is doing them. We don't recognize how toxic they can be to us. So the six stages of disease, this is a Ayurvedic, which is traditional Indian medicine. This is their view of things. I think it's spot on in terms of what we talk about. The word in Ayurveda is called dosha, which is mind-body type. And dosha literally means impurity. It means if you've taken physical form, you're becoming toxic. Okay, so when you are born, okay, so everyone is born in this accumulation phase. As you know, life is a sexually transmitted incurable disease. So it's a tough place to start from. And it just keeps getting worse. No, I mean, this is the idea. You're in this body, you're gonna develop some form of toxicity if you breathe, okay? And I recommend breathing highly, okay? So you will get free radical metabolism and all kinds of other things. So so accumulation is a good place to be at. This means you're vibrantly well. Aggravation is as toxins accumulate, the state of vibrant well-being decreases. There it goes. But we are still considered well. At this point, most people living in these stage one or two, our goal of our detox program is to be living in these phases. Dissemination. This is where toxicity comes about and you really start to feel unwell. This is those that last page of symptoms that we were talking about. I'm achy, don't feel good, whatever, you know, just don't feel right. This is the dissemination phase. Localization. And this is a good model to help you understand when your doctor says all your tests are okay, it's because all your tests were supposed to be okay, because these stages of dis-ease are not disease. You don't feel good, but you're not diseased. So, and when we talk about so many things, the fibromyalgias and the chronic fatigues and some of the things, not that they don't have a pathophysiology, they're more descriptions of all of this stuff that's going on in our body, that disease can be significantly uncomfortable if untreated, by the way. And if your body's good enough, it'll keep you from going through localization. Now, most of us will get that. You have that one weak spot. If you have this process, this toxicity continues in your body, and we'll talk more about toxins in a little bit, develops in your body, you have that one weak spot. For me, it's my sinuses. For the next person, it's their digestion. For the next person, they get hives. You get the idea. They go see the doctor. The dermatologist gives them a steroid cream, and the hives go away, and you kind of go, oh, okay, I guess I just was itchy or something. Or you get a symptom reliever. This is the problem, is that whatever you take to cover up your symptom, okay, is usually not only effective, like the heartburn medicine is effective, but you never listen to your heartburn, so you have to go on to other stages of diseases, manifestation and chronicity. And so whatever process you take at this point, now, as we said, the previous stage, localization, going to this stage, manifestation, this is where we finally start diagnosing diseases. Now, I hope you're understanding. For anybody who's been through this scenario where the doctor said the tests are okay and my x-ray was all right, this is the phase of disease. And understanding this is a really good idea. And so this is why we need to do detoxification, because our body, until we get to here, is trying so hard to keep you from getting sick, especially, you know, if you're cramming for the finals of something, you got to make it to an anniversary day, to whatever else is going on. And so your body is trying to help you. But if you keep taking the drugs and the symptom relievers, you're adding all new diseases as you go along. And so the people, when I say all new diseases, you take a heartburn medicine and it shuts off the symptom and you feel better. Now that medicine, if taken chronically, okay, will lead to a whole set of diseases itself, because it is a poison, a new toxin. You understand? This is why it's so good in your life to not take medicines for symptom relief unless you have to. They add to the toxicity that will eventually overwhelm your system and lead to disease. Okay? And so, manifestation, this is nice. A scratchy throat at this phase becomes a true tonsillitis. Sinus congestion and drainage and things become a sinus infection. So we're getting worse and worse symptoms. And then finally, chronicity is when you start getting atherosclerosis, cancers, autoimmune diseases, etc. This is the body is overwhelmed with toxins in their system. Okay. Now, if this is true, this detoxification is probably our only form of preventive medicine that actually exists in terms of helping you prevent disease. I'm a big fan, as everybody knows, of pap smears and sometimes mammograms, etc. I mean, depending on the situation. But as you know, most Western medicine is not preventive medicine, it's early detection medicine. And there's a great role for early detection. So if you're doing detoxification, do I say, well, you know, gosh, I don't need to get my colonoscopy if I'm over 50. No, I didn't say that. Okay, I said, is it probably more important to prevent things like cancer by doing detoxification than it is to get a colonoscopy to find it early? Yes, it's more important to do that. Some people do the right things and still get diseases. As a matter of fact, every one of you, that will occur, because you are, as we get older, you will get something. We all eventually die. Okay, so that is a truth of our human experience. So does everybody understand? And this is a really important thing. The traditional systems, everybody, There's some form of meditation to help you with how you perceive this world. Everybody, you do some form of detoxification. I'm not saying everybody did it right. I'm not saying everybody agreed on how to do it. I'm just saying this is a universal truth according to every system of healing, is you need to spend time in silence. That's a whole other talk, okay? And that's stress management. And then we need to do some form of detoxification because this human body rusts, or whatever term you want to use, through free radical metabolism, stress and high adrenaline and cortisol levels, to especially ladies, all the chemicals you smother on yourselves and your skin and things like that. These systems of detoxification were present long before pesticides and the tens and tens of thousands of chemicals that are flushed into our environment. So detoxification is much more important now than when all this stuff was being written. Okay, and so do you understand that basic model of accumulation and all that we're talking about, the dissemination, etc.? That's why we do detoxification, because to be ultimately well, you actually have to do this in some way. Okay? How to test for toxicity. Now, again, we want to get into metabolic health, but sometimes there are things in the way. Okay, so food allergies. Okay, so can food allergies, there's a whole book called Your Hidden Allergies Are Making You Fat. Okay, and it's dedicated. Alison Haas has written False Fat Diets, talking about very similar things. Food sensitivities and how they can lead to weight gain, etc. So it's not just weight gain. And sometimes I overemphasize that because this is a talk on weight loss. This is about being healthy. So one person might manifest insulin resistance as weight gain. The next person might manifest it as an autoimmune disease. The next person might manifest it as a cancer. Okay, so it's depending on your own susceptibility. Just being at optimal weight does not mean you're healthy. Okay, so it's that sense of vibrant well-being. That's what we're looking for. And most people don't have that. So this test for toxicity thing is just a reminder to me. If you say, gosh, you know, Gary, I'm really working on this. I do sauna treatments, sweat lodges, colonics, and, you know, all that stuff going on, and I still feel toxic. We'll talk about BIA tests and things like this, and it's still showing a lot of toxicity. Sometimes we need to look for what's going on in your body. Is it food sensitivities? Is it in your GI tract? Do we need to do stool tests? There are many other tests for toxicity as well, too. Porphyrins and other things that you can check into to see if you've overwhelmed your body's metabolic detoxification system. The reason I, quote unquote, picked on the skin care products especially is because your body was meant, if it did ingest toxins, to have it go through your mouth, and you have a liver there that is set up with these things. And I'm not going to go into phase one, phase two detoxification tonight. It's fun stuff for me, but not usually for you. But I'm just saying there's good systems in your body that are meant to help you polarize these fat-soluble toxins primarily, glom them onto things, and get them out of you. Okay, that system can be overwhelmed fairly easily. Okay, and so we can test for heavy metal toxicity, etc. This is where functional medicine is huge. Functional medicine is just a system of healing. We're trying to look at why, really re-honor fatty acid metabolism, carbohydrate metabolism, and understanding of the human body from that level. Okay, I'm both a bottom-up kind of guy and a top-down kind of guy in terms of I like the bigger picture part of things, but reductionistic medicine, the best model of reductionistic medicine is functional medicine. They really do look at how do things work. Okay. Western medicine I put down as the best system of healing ever for acute injury, acute trauma, acute heart attacks, etc. Really, unfortunately, focused too much on symptom relief than on disease diagnosis, actually dis-ease, discomfort diagnosis. But even how we approach diseases with drugs most of the time adds toxicity and leads to new diseases because it has to. If you understand that basic model, adding toxins, you've already developed toxicity. You developed a disease, okay? That means your toxic burden, lots of straws on the camel's back or up to here, and then you put in a drug to treat that disease. What have you added to? Your toxic burden, okay? And that disease might go away. You take the gallbladder out. Gosh, the gallbladder's not going to be a problem anymore, huh? The toxic burden is still there, so you have to develop a disease in some other organ. Have to. Okay. How to do a toxic dump. I like toxic dump as an idea. We all need to dump regularly. Dump, bump, shh. Okay. And so, any system of detoxification calls the best system. I mean, I've read whole spa therapy books from Germany, from Romania, a few other places, looking at how to do a detox. Now, what I want you to know is that, realistically speaking, detoxification was always for kind of more the royalty. Everybody else was working too hard to detox, okay? And so a real system of detoxification is getting away from those kids, getting away from your job, okay? Going out into nature, really. And especially this one book, I'm blocking on the title, is an awesome book about which forms of spas to use for which condition. And if you had more arthritis, and I can't remember, so don't quote me on this, you wanted the spa with more lithium in the water. And it went on and on about the different things that you were supposed to do. And this last chapter was, basically, if you don't get away from family, don't get away from the kids, you shouldn't bother with any of this stuff. You know, getting away from that stuff was one of the key parts of detoxing. Most of us, our vacations in America have gone away to the point where, you know, most vacations, we understand this, aren't vacations. You come back from vacations more tired than beforehand. So we don't take the time. We don't honor this beingness side of ourselves to really heal from what most systems of healing would call detoxification, which is getting out into nature, having people make your dinners for you, and we'll talk about, you know, pure whole foods. That's the most important thing. Your stress, your cell phones are off, your laptops are off, et cetera, et cetera. You're just letting your body focus its energies on cleansing. Okay, so this basic dosage of detoxification, which is following some form of a program for 1 to 2 weeks at least 3 times per year, that's how much it's necessary to keep this toxic burden from keep building in our body. Now, more important than that, the idea is to get to vibrant wellness. Because remember, whatever drug you take can help treat a disease. It can help a symptom. Remember, we're not saying it doesn't help symptoms. Drugs help symptoms. Will it help you get to vibrant wellness? The very nature of what you're taking means it cannot do that. It's not intended to do that. It's intended to relieve a symptom, which is hopefully a good understanding and why you should know, if you just keep taking drugs to treat symptoms, why you have to get more diseased. It cannot be any other way. And the more of those drugs you take, the more you need detoxification. So a detox diet pretty much means, yes, as everybody says, eliminating all the things I love. and so you take away most of the common food allergens. Food sensitivities / allergies / reactions, whatever term you want to use, okay, are definitely one of the more common causes of unwellness I see. And if you can get people away from the foods that cause the reactions, they get better. Almost always. I just finished a detox last week, and the way I describe the way I like to do it is like a paleo vegan. Everybody who's been to the paleo talks that we've done know the basic principle of paleolithic diets cannot be wrong. Okay, when I say it that way, the basic principle is to eat real food. It's a very simple way of looking at it. If it's a highly processed food, if it has a label on it, don't eat it. Okay, that's a very simple rule to follow. Unfortunately, that takes you away from most of the fast food restaurants and all the other things. And so, and in general, you want to minimize your work of digestion. So why paleo vegan? Everybody knows that I love meat. Okay. However, if I'm working on my detoxification system, having my energy work on digesting meat is not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to digest me. Okay. So paleo vegan is the way I eat, which means eating these things for the week of the detox, along with doing something to help with cleansing solutions to help clean the gunk out. Okay. If you incorporate a grain, quinoa and rice are the best to use in these things because they're most hypoallergenic. Okay. So it goes into you have to be careful about making anything into a belief system. So I really have found that, you know, there's people who are getting with paleo the way some of the vegans have gotten in my practice, which is very religious about it. And we don't want that. We don't want this to be a belief system. When I said it has to be right, taking people away from sugars and processed foods, almost everybody who looks into nutrition agrees with that part. The grains and beans things, no, I agree that everybody doesn't agree on that. Those are the most common pollutants in our standard diet, though, grains and beans. And taking those out for a 3-week period and seeing how your body does, reintroducing them. Now, so this is when I talk about doing paleo diets for people, I'm saying at least for 3 weeks, everybody can live without grains and beans as well as processed foods for 3 weeks. I'm digressing a little bit from detoxing. You can do this with a part of a detoxification system. But just do that. And then after 3 weeks, you say, Gary, I miss my quinoa. And I'm going to go, okay. Now, whatever symptom you're looking for, you've hopefully detoxed in that three-week period. You reintroduce, and I like quinoa, by the way. You reintroduce quinoa, and your little localization symptom comes back. You get a sinus problem. You get a migraine. You got to listen to your own body. Because at that point, okay, and I'm saying if you get that, at that point, you get a digestive disturbance, you get any kind of rash, whatever your symptom is, you are losing weight and you start to gain weight again when you reintroduce this quinoa. Whatever it is, then you'll know, I should eat quinoa or not. It's no longer a belief system. You don't have to be paleo because Gary said so. You don't eat quinoa if your body tells you to. You do eat quinoa if you do well with it. Okay, it's good, and quinoa really is a pseudo cereal, you guys. So it has a very low cross reactivity with other grains. It's really one of the best grains. Okay, when you look at carbohydrate load in today's world, unless you're a big time exerciser, it's difficult to keep weight down if you don't keep your carb load down. Okay, so and you can do the same thing with black beans. You can do the same with anything. Listen to your own body, and then the believer part of you, okay, doesn't have to be the one running you anymore. It's I eat this way because my body tells me to. Okay, it's a very important principle. And if you, everybody in my practice knows this, if you end up down the route of a raw food vegan or eating elk all day long, matters not to me. It matters that you listen to your body, and if you run better on elk, that sounds kind of like on John Deere, sound bad. Anyways, if you run better on that, then eat that way. Not because anybody told you to, because your body told you to. And if you run better on a raw food vegan diet, please eat that way without making it into a belief system and needing to change other people in the world. Okay? Please. So, because, you know, there really are people very angry at me for saying eat real food and not being a pure whatever as far as that goes because I don't fit into their belief system. And that's kind of sad if you think about it. And you look at that and you go, wow, you know, there's so much better things for you to do in your time than spend time being angry with me. it really is. I mean, and so look at that, what we talk about. So back to what we're talking during a detox diet. For about a week, all these are the only things I ate along with a protein drink, okay? And I do that system, some variation thereof, with all kinds of other, my little twists and turns on detoxification. You know, and I do that on a regular basis just to see, check in with my body, take some time for cleansing, move on. You have to eliminate alcohol. Now, obviously, if you're on a blood pressure medicine, whatever else, please continue what medicines you're on for health conditions. We're not asking you to go off things and have a stroke or something else. But, you know, try to get off of all your ibuprofens and any of your symptom reliever medicines. Yes, that's a good idea during a detox. If you haven't detoxed from caffeine, you must eliminate all caffeine, whether that's colas, coffee, etc. Now, can you make him drink? So it says, sure, but can you make him drink? water, because it's detox talk, of course. basic caveats that I would want you to, let's see. I'm going to cover those things in just a second. So, take the time, at least a week, three times a year, where you do a super pure diet. We'll talk about support things that you can use to help yourself detox. And there's many other things you can do supportive as well. Okay, and think of it as a great time to be loving towards yourself and caring towards yourself. Most people know when I do my weight loss talk, it's really about love and compassion and how we've lost sight of who we are and those types of things in terms of why our body doesn't print out the way that we do. And so this is one of the biggest things is this is a self-love moment, taking care of yourself, honoring thyself. And yes, every sentient being across all the globe for thousands of years is said to do the same thing. Under my little rule of orienting generalizations, I'd say do it. They did do different things. Panchakarma in India used to involve all kinds of things they don't do anymore, okay? And no, we don't do bloodletting. And I'm not saying everybody had it right when it comes down to this detox thing, but everybody did it. And whether you become more of a sweat lodger, panchakarma person, colonic person, sauna person, there's so many great ways to detox. And it is about caring for yourself and about vibrant wellness. more so than, gosh, I want to wait until I really get sick before I take this stuff on. No, this isn't really what this is about, you know. It's kind of the way most people approach things. Look at the model. I mean, everybody waits until the hurricane hits New Orleans before we do anything about something. And if you don't think you're that way about your health, you're fooling yourself, okay? We wait until the crisis hits before we deal with our own health. And so we have to look at all the things that create that model and get you guys away from it. That's why, in general, seeing a Western MD doctor for preventive health is not smart medicine, because it is waiting for the hurricane to hit and then you see your doctor medicine. That's what we've been trained in, us MD types, okay? And so in general, now obviously I've done a lot of training and a lot of other things because I love medicine, but it was quite a leap for me to get away from that training in terms of outpatient medicine, okay? So on that order, the other things people commonly ask about, fasting. Fasting is a wonderful, metabolically healthy thing to do. Fasting is awesome. Time in silence with fasting is incredible. I recommend it to everyone if you're healthy. Okay. Fasting, truly water fasting, sometimes vegetable juice fasting or juice fasting if you want to, is a wonderfully healthy thing for your mitochondria, for disease prevention, for everything else. If you are sick and you have a lot of symptoms, please, the basic example I could give you, fasting is sort of like doing cleanup without any cleaning solutions. Okay, that's a tougher job. And if you got a messy house, please use some whatever cleaner you use. Okay, and if you are in pretty good shape and you're getting to that very healthy phase of things, fasting is awesome. Okay, I really do encourage it. But as a general talk, is it a starting place for detox? Please do not start there if you're not already pretty dang healthy. Okay, the beginning of the year, I do fasting on a fairly regular basis. Doesn't matter how much. But at the beginning of the year, I give the cleaning solutions. Why? Because it's right after football seasons. The Gators lost in their bowl game. That led to a little extra drinking. Just kidding, actually. But but I'm just saying is, do I detox from the holidays? And if on Christmas, I think it was, I was like, I'm going to cheat today. I want some chocolate. And this is a funny story. It's like, I'm going to cheat today. And I was like, and Miranda goes, how about quinoa? And I go, you need to talk about what cheating means, okay? Because I ain't cheating with quinoa, okay? Now, I like quinoa, but in the world of cheating, it's not what I was thinking about, you know? So now I'm talking chocolate. I'm talking about that, chocolate cheat place with all those fun things. That's what I'm talking about. So I detox from that stuff, too. Not from quinoa. Sorry. It's like, really, cheating with quinoa? I mean, what kind of world has this become? All right, far infrared saunas. Everybody knows I love saunas, part of detoxification and weight loss. We used to have one at our place. We've downsized a little bit as far as that goes. I recommend people look into far infrared saunas. Sauna therapy can help with getting to best weight. It can help with detoxification for so many levels. The sweat that you get from far infrared sauna is definitely laden with the toxins that we're trying to get out. Using your skin as part of a detoxification system is pretty darn cool. Look into far infrared saunas, okay? And this is a little joke. Oh, okay, sir, would you like inferno or non-inferno? Haha, just kidding. It's all inferno, of course. I just get a kick out of saying that. I don't know. It's just right after the sauna section. So I keep the sauna around 135 to 140, which isn't quite inferno, mind you. But it does get you a nice metabolic burn, increases metabolic rate, definitely is a very useful thing. IV glutathione, this is more for people who have other illnesses. IV glutathione can help support a detox program. You know, this is interesting because there's a lady, and she's a nurse up in the Napa area, and we talked about this area just advertising with the local wine touring people. It's like, how about some IV glutathione right after the wine tasting, which would be a really good idea, by the way. I don't know, that's getting to like being Beverly Hills kind of medicine, though. So, but it really is. But IV glutathione is definitely one of those things. It's a tripeptide, just glycine, glutamic acid, and cysteine together. Your body's natural antioxidant system, glutathione. There's many antioxidant systems. And by the way, the Chopra Center did this as well. When you go through many of their detoxification programs, you can get much great boosts in your glutathione, okay, and other things. So for what studies have been done in humans, which really isn't very good in terms of detoxification, so the things that you would look at do improve when you do these systems, whether it's increase in antioxidant capacity, detoxification capacity. So And this can be used for heavy metal toxicity as well, prevention of radiation injury. That's just a cute little picture of what it looks like. Now, this is in the animal self-help section. So this is the reminder to me of doing it by instinct, dare to be nocturnal, become one of the herd. So what's the best way to detox? Explore and have fun with this, okay? I knew about colon hydrotherapy for like decades before I said, all right, this is lady. I said, all right, I'm going to have you do this. And it was a fascinating experience. there's something different about it. That's all I'm going to say. And if you're drawn to colon hydrotherapy as a way of part of a detox system, that's a good thing. If you like sweat lodges, if you like saunas, what I'm trying to get across to you is, outside of the standard prepackaged things that we do to enhance liver and GI detoxification, so the functional medicine doctors have all kinds of set programs, and they're out there on the websites as well, too. Those are good things, and I think supportive cleansing solutions to help you detox, okay? But the like anything else, the best, everybody's heard me say this, what's the best way to exercise? The one you'll do, okay? The best way to detox, the one you'll do. Because that's it, you know? So you have to find something and keep making this journey until you find something that works for you. All this stuff is supposed to be fun. When you come out of it, you feel good. I want you to emphasize the idea of coming out of a detox. Going into a detox, if you're fairly toxic, yeah, you'll go through some stuff, okay? And so, but you'll come out feeling better and saying, wow, this is something I need to do more often. And then when you get there, you'll remember, oh, this kind of sucked going through it. And then you might not do it. And so you get support, get community support. Detoxification is one of the most important healthy things you can do. And like I said earlier, it's one of the only true forms of preventive medicine that exists. I love the Heal Detox. And I'm going to show you a few things. I already told you there's hundreds of ways of doing detox. There's hundreds of prepackaged things. This is a homeotoxicology is a kind of a branch somewhere between homeopathy and Western medicine. Heal is the only company that really does this well. Their detox kit has been shown to improve lymphatic clearance, renal clearance, GI clearance. It is a good detox. People will tell you how to do this. It's very simple. You just add 20 drops of three different solutions into water, and you do that daily for about a couple of weeks. Okay. This Clear Change program, which is what I have right here, is a very good, it used to be called Ultra Clear Renew, and it has Adam Clear, and it basically, remember how I said I wasn't going to get into all this phase one, phase two detoxification. It's providing you the nutrients, so when your body activates, starts detoxing, you have enough stuff to glom onto it so you get it out of your body. Okay, it's a very important thing. The first step in detoxification, if you only do this phase one thing, you can make yourself really toxic by making something that was started off toxic even more toxic before you glom on something to it and get it out of you. And the only thing to remember is there's many things you can do to help with these conjugation reactions, phase two detoxification. That's where functional medicine really is good. And something like this is a great program. Most of the doctor-oriented supplement companies have these types of things through this functional medicine program. Okay, Jeff Bland has been the main leaders. He's a brilliant PhD in nutrition, biochemistry. He used to work with Linus Pauling, etc. Really has been one of the key leaders of this movement. When I say this, there are, do not take, if there's anything I found causing toxicity, it's often been detox supplements where people come in and have really wacky abnormal liver tests. Oh, I'm doing some sort of herbal detox, and it has these Chinese herbs and other things. They're often loaded with toxins. So if you don't research this stuff, you have to be very careful about what you take. I'm very particular about supplements anyway. So when I said these are the only ones I would do, I'm not saying there aren't other good ones. It's that you got to find a few things that you know are good, they work well, they're safe. Okay. So I'm not trying to discourage you from doing your own research. Just be very careful. There's a lot of companies out there throwing out a lot of very questionable products. All right. So, what time is it? Huh? Ah, I suck at this. All right. all right, it's 10 packs. We've gone through part one, detoxification. Please ask questions. Yes? Yes. That's what I was talking about, which was if you take the wrong supplement. Right. There's many supplements out there that are not very well made and can be quite toxic to the liver.
Is that the ionic foot spas where you put in water and they hold
hadn't thought about that one in a while. Thank you. She's asking about those little foot spas. There was a time where somebody who was distributing those things, I said, listen, let's do a trial, even if this is back at Natural Balance time. Nobody wants to study that because does it work? I have people swear by these. There's a foot, a pad you can put in your shoes, that you can detox through your feet. So there's these foot spas therapies. Their research they have is really in-house stuff that is of highly dubious quality. So what I tell you is, it's safe. It's harmless. You do little foot baths. So taking the time out, I'm a big fan of something if it's non-toxic and safe. And if I can get somebody to just take a half an hour, however many times a week, to sit down and just put their feet in some warm water and let it turn gunky and visualize that they're detoxing themselves, I think there's enormous benefit in that. I really do. Okay. Whether it really works from a standpoint of the things I look for, enhanced glutathione, there's markers for DNA damage and other things that go up during a detox and then down again. That kind of stuff hasn't been done. So, and how real it is, I do not know. But I don't think anybody knows. But the very process of having the intentionality, I'm going to help my body detox, taking the time to sit quietly, putting your foot into a spa, I think is a really good idea because most people don't even go that far. So from that standpoint, even though I've already mentioned it's not doubly blinded and all that other stuff, and if you know, you just leave that thing in there and you don't put your feet, the water gets extraordinarily gunky, okay? So, and it does a little get gunkier, you know, with some people's feet compared to others? Yes, but have you seen some people's feet? you know. That's quite a stew you're making in there just by like soaking most people's feet in there. So I highly suggest, you know, soaking those suckers because you got years of stuff going on. For the general purposes, back to what we're talking about. Unproven, but I'm for it because it is safe. There's nothing toxic about the current that's used in there. Yes?
How effective is our IV glutathione treatment? I've heard that glutathione only lasts a short time in the system.
Mm-hmm. Great. The question is, how effective are IV glutathione? And you're going to come across the same thing I said with these foot spas. IV glutathione has been used in functional medicine for a long, long time. It has studies on the things like you're saying about preventing radiation toxicity. Its main focus in terms of research, of course, has been on treating diseases. Okay. So in terms of the standpoint of, there's a difference between the levels that you get in a bloodstream, which come and go, like IV vitamin C and IV glutathione are great examples of that, versus tissue half-lives. So when you give an IV nutrient, it's often its effect on tissue and metabolism can be for days afterwards, even though it's cleared from the bloodstream as you would measure it. The same thing goes like, everybody knows the Z-Pak. It's cleared from your bloodstream, but the tissue level and the macrophages and things are still there. Its functionality is much longer than its half-life. We found that a lot for many medicines that we've overdosed in the past is we're basing it upon serum half-life. How long it's in your bloodstream, okay, versus what is its tissue half-life, meaning what kind of effect does that intervention have on what system for how many days, even if it's not present in the bloodstream. So glutathione is extremely effective for Parkinson's, for instance, and it can last, the effects of it can last for days, weeks, and sometimes. So it goes past that's long after the effects of the present in the glutathione in the bloodstream. So it's anecdotal, though. You're completely correct. Whether you look at IV vitamin C or IV glutathione, the levels staying in the bloodstream are for hours at a time. It's basically anecdotally, doctors have noticed that it has a profound effect for much longer. So that's a great question.
So are you saying that throughout the year, maybe, like you said, at least 1 week, maybe 2 weeks of the basic cleansing, detoxing, you're saying you can do fasting if you are healthy? I mean, are you saying that would be the same thing too, the 1 to 2 weeks and only with the juices?
In general, the question goes into fasting. In general, you would do a detox like this. Most people fasting is going to be done for 1 day at a time, a weekend at a time, etc., depending on your body's metabolism. And whether you do water fasting or juice fasting depends on how used to fasting you get. Okay, and so if and that process, to me, in terms of truly healing at deeper levels is really truly spirit, mind, body medicine. And going into silence and letting that go is a wonderful part to combine with fasting. And even if you take a half day to start, I think that's a good dot. For many people, a half day in silence and just water fasting is quite a challenge for them. Then doing a day at a time, okay, and then sometimes a weekend. But what I recommend for almost any extraordinarily advanced practitioner to really do something like that for a week at a time.
What do you think
is coffee fasting? Okay, just stick right there.
There's one more thing I wanted to ask about that. Along with this, so with the fasting, you wouldn't add the supplements because you're saying the supplements help to get it out more so.
Right.
Just the actual fasting, is that what you're saying?
They help. Correct. If you have, they help with that getting the rest of the junk out of there, so outside of.
Would you do that then with the food one you're talking about? Would you do this also?
You would do. You would do this just with the food, eating the foods a certain way.
Food version.
Right.
And if you didn't do this, then you're only going to maybe start to get some stuff out, but it's better to have things that help to take it a step further.
It's best to have things that help take it a step further. And so, and remember, it's detoxing is a lot of like, you know, if anybody's cleaned a carpet, the stain goes away and then it comes back up again. The stain goes, that's the way this toxicity thing is. Most of us are laden with all kinds of things in our body, and it takes a long time to get that stuff out of you. And it does keep seeping back out in addition to the stuff you're putting back in. So the fasting that I would do would really be a kind of a more healthy physical slash mental slash spiritual practice that is a wonderful thing for all kinds of health, but it's really a much deeper program and once you want to head down that way. Oh, coffee. Yeah, coffee is such a polarizing thing because, you know, there's people, oh, you can't drink coffee, but, you know, if we shove it up your butt, it's great for you. It's like, wow, how'd you come up with that one? You know, well, because you don't taste it that way, or, you know, and there are unique aspects to coffee enemas, and it's coffee, when you say coffee for fasting, that's usually coffee for detoxing. So coffee enemas can be wonderful for pain relief and can do all kinds of other things. It has maybe more of an effect on the biliary tree than drinking it orally, but this is the key. Coffee is a common toxin for people. They don't do well with it. So I like coffee, and I've detoxed from it many times. But this last detox, did I still drink my usual couple of cups of coffee? Yes, I did. Why is that? Because I hate detoxing from coffee. It hurts like hell. And so I'm not going to do that if I'm just going to drink coffee again because I've done the process, gone off coffee, reintroduce it. What do you do? I do better. I do well with this. I don't have any toxicity from this. But if you notice, if you've never gotten away from coffee, let's just use that example. I'm talking about the oral kind right now. whatever with the other stuff, okay. And you do detox. And then when you reintroduce it, remember this is about the conscious aspect. The most important parts for me with detox is reintroduction. So you've gone off of whatever, red wine, and as soon as you reintroduce it, boosh, something happens, a headache or whatever else. It's your body telling you red wine ain't for you. Or you can drink it, and it's okay. I think for almost anybody, there's a limit. If you do well with red wine, it might be one glass or one and a half or two, but almost anybody of any age is going to notice that they can't tolerate much more than that. They've overwhelmed their metabolic detoxification capacities. So the reason, like when you're fasting, if you're really healthy, your body has all these systems, and if they're already in jiving and going, they'll detox, they'll handle it. They don't need any additional cleaning solutions. Your body can handle it. You have to be pretty dang healthy to be in that position. So, but coffee is usually taken out because it is a potential irritant, food allergen, etc. during most detoxifications. And anybody who has not done that should do that as part of their detox. It is not fun, though, because coffee withdrawal headaches hurt. Okay, it's not the end of the world. You just hurt. And so, and then you go through them and you go, wow, that was... not. I'm addicted to coffee. And yes, you will be addicted. Am I addicted to coffee? Yes, I am. Yes?
Yeah, two questions. One is, how quickly do you normally see a reaction once you've reintroduced food? And second one, about detoxing kids, trying to get them off certain things, for example, you know, we want to see what they're allergic to or reactive to. How long would you do a detox program for a kid?
All right. So... what was the first question again? Sorry.
How quickly do you get a reaction?
Most people, how quickly do you get a reaction when you reintroduce something? Most of the time, if you pay attention, you have some symptom telling you that within minutes or minutes at most hours that you're not doing well with something. Okay, so and that's the thing is the signal to noise ratio. Most people have so much things going into their body. Okay, the example I give is smoking cigarettes. You smoke first, start smoking, you cough. Okay, now why after you continue smoking do you stop coughing? Because your body goes, damn, they are not paying attention, and said, all right, I'm going to change things around here and not going to cough anymore. Did cigarettes just become good for you? No, your body is saying, I don't know why they keep doing this, but I'm just, your body adapts to the worst possible crap. That's the idea, okay? So, now, most of us are throwing in the worst feuds 3 times a day, 4 times a day, and at some point, the cough, okay, so it's not as obvious as a cough, and that's the rash, the burping, the digestive problems, the sinus problems, aren't as prominent because there's so many signals, so much noise there. So you clear this stuff out with a detox, all these foods and things, and you say, well, I really want to go back to my corn, okay? So you've not eaten any corn for at least a week on this detox program, okay? So at least a week, and then you reintroduce corn, and you realize, wow, I get this, because even after a week, the cough comes back. Sorry, the symptom, it's not as usually a cough. So it's, and you'll know right away, and at that point, you can make a decision. This is where, one of my big things with stress management is talking about belief versus understanding versus knowingness, okay? At that, I don't want you to believe in this stuff. I want you to understand it to some degree, but knowing it is more important. Your body tells you not to eat corn. It doesn't have to be a belief system anymore. Your body says, I don't do well with corn. Or whatever, okay, remember, or blueberries, whatever it is, okay, I mean, it's the same thing. If your body doesn't do well with it, at that point, go, huh, for some reason my body doesn't do well with whatever it is, okay, and that's the beauty of the detox, is sometimes these things, they get back, especially during the holidays, back into our diet, you detox and you realize, wow, I really shouldn't be eating that stuff. And it's not because anybody told me to. If this is true freedom, actual choice making based upon you, not upon Dr. Oz, Dr. Forsman, or anybody else. I know, I gotta get going with the weight loss stuff. And then in terms of kids with detox, I'm not an expert in helping kids with detox. Most of the times, you're just trying to control their diet as best you can, and then when they get old enough to make their own decisions, why I tell people to start doing detox. Yes?
I remember you telling me one time that you prefer not to tell people what the side effects of medicines are because they'll get the side effects.
Correct.
Now, how would you distinguish when you reintroduce something like peanuts or something, and you get a headache? I have friends, who are convinced that peanuts are bad for them, and they're going to get a headache no matter what, whether it's peanuts or not. So is there any distinguishing between talking yourself into a symptom and actually
Well, it's kind of the basis of the question is much the placebo effect as anything else or nocebo effects and things. Can people really talk themselves out? Let's take it in both directions. We'll just use peanuts because that was the things here. It could have been any food here, by the way. So introduce peanuts. And let's say you're just convinced in your head that you're going to react to it. Then please don't introduce peanuts because yes, it might be totally your mind seeing it is enough to cause that reaction. We all know that's true. Okay. Same thing goes. Are we powerful enough sometimes to overcome the symptoms? That's usually you just not being willing to listen. If you do a detox, one of the beauties of this is hopefully most of the people who go through this, they're willing to actually listen to their body. And they'll realize, wow, those peanuts affected me this way. And they'll listen to it. But can you tell if it was you psyching yourself out versus a real no? Okay. And there's no difference anyways. That's the whole thing. Placebo effects and surgeries are after, getting a surgery, not getting a surgery, they're very real things. So there's no way to actually tell if it's a placebo thing. You just psyched yourself into a corn allergy versus have one. If you react to it, just listen to your body, whether it's a truth or not. That's the whole point. And that's why not making it a belief system is so important. Because, yeah, you might have just psyched yourself out with peanuts or corn, and that's why you're reacting to it. That's why we don't want it to become a belief system in the whole world to take down peanuts, because that's not a good idea. Okay. Yes? Is decaf coffee still an irritant? It can be. So if you haven't, coffee is one of those things I would definitely, if I've never detoxed from, I'd make sure I did at least once. And when you reintroduced it, really pay attention to your body. How do I do? And coffee is the kind of same way I'd kind of put with alcohol, is that there's going to be some dosage that some people are going to do well with. This goes into body types, actually. If you look at Ayurvedic medicine, kapha people do, and don't worry about this, but certain body types do very well with coffee, certain body types do moderately, certain body types do badly. So the idea that coffee is always bad for you is absolutely an untruth. That it could be bad for you is true. Let you determine whether that is the case, not somebody on TV. Or Prescription for Nutritional Healing, which always says stopping coffee, which is kind of these ridiculous things they do. Okay, we want people, individual medicine. Remember, the idea of all of this is this case has passed double-blind trials. Okay, when you try, the way we're so focused, and that's why opening our mind in terms of looking at things, like even what I said about the foot spa, oh, that's so non-scientific. The human body, the mind, is not scientific. It's a multifactorial process. If you want double-blind trials, you're only talking about diseases and specific drug effects. That's the only thing you'll ever be shown by that. When it comes to treating individuals, the truth of individuals is some people do well with coffee and some people don't. And if you want to wait to a trial that blindedly shows that, you'll never find it. Okay, so this is why we have to take charge of our own health and not let other people tell us what to do, because it's usually going to be wrong. And the more adamantly somebody believes in something, the louder they talk about it. So you have to be very careful, because this isn't about belief systems. Outside of belief, I ask people to believe me enough to try what I'm talking about. Then get some understanding, but it's experiential knowingness that matters to me. Okay, experiential knowingness. Actually do these things. Don't read about them. Do them. Okay, and then whether you like riding bikes should not be based upon somebody telling you to do it, whether you believe you can do it. It's whether you get on a bike and say, this is for me. Okay, this stuff needs to be ridden. Okay, so get and do these detoxes. I cannot emphasize enough, do these things and see what you experience. Okay, that's experiential knowingness. That's where I think that's a huge gap, especially in the misinformation era that we're in, is that people aren't experiencing things anymore. They're reading up on side effects. I'd never take that drug, you know. I'd never do these other things. I'd never, because they've read about it, okay? And if you'd read the side effect profile of almost anything, you'd never do it. Tennis is brutal, okay? I mean, you know, you could lose your eye. You could drop dead of a heart attack. I mean, if there is nothing. Taking a shower, good heavens, you know? I mean, getting into your car, nothing. You would not experience life at all if you read the side effect profile of it. Okay, so stop reading side effect profiles. That's what I think. I'm not saying be blithely ignorant of dangerous things. I mean, know how to drive a car before you get in one. But I'm just saying is most of life, whether you do well with a detox, is not something to wait for a trial about. Because you might do well with heel detox. This person does better with enemas. How do you know? You did it. Okay. How would you know? You feel well. How do I know that's not a placebo effect? Who in the frick cares? Okay, really? I mean, you know, and so that's what we have to get past. I mean, you know, I did this thing on this the Myers cocktail, and it was on the online news press, and I've got to finally respond to that. I keep forgetting about that. And you know, it's just like, well, I'll wait until a double-blind trial. It must have been some doctor who wrote this on, because you know, the one study we used, and I'm thinking how sad. I did this, and it's like how sad it would be if I had to wait until double-blind trials were around to recommend things. That means I have become a pre-programmed automaton, and the guise of intelligence, meaning I only wait for this double-blind trial, keeps the person from seeing how non-intelligent they are, because they have now cocooned themselves in this. I only do these one little things. How sad that is. It really is. It's tragic. Come on.
How many times does that test turn around a year or two later and they do the same thing and they change your mind?
Right. Exactly. And that goes into, if you only swing with the latest studies, and then you're really always tossing yourself about. And you haven't held on to these really core truths, so that when you get the latest studies, you keep going from there and add a little something in. You've got to develop core truths. All right. So, the way to weight loss. There's no way we're going to get through this. So, this is going to be on the website. Let me see. I'm going to think about how I'm going to do this. What time is it? What time am I supposed to end? Okay. Exactly. All right. Now, I discussed weight loss, and I talked about how it's a spiritual process. The fascinating thing for me is everything is medicine, Okay, so not just New England Journal of Medicine, not just, I mean, I'm talking about everything is really about our healing. There is an epidemic of obesity going on, and it is truly frightening. Okay, and so there's got to be something core to that. And so, and when I talk about, and these definitions are here about what agape love is, about compassion, co-suffering, what compassion means. But I do want to get that there's a core process, whether it's what we do to, leads to global warming, what we do that leads to national debt, what we do that leads to personal debt. Something has shifted in our consciousness that from 1980 on, especially from 90 on, there is an epidemic of change that leads to multiple diseases, okay? And I think you have to look something a lot more core than, gosh, I just ate too many carbs. Carbs are a huge component of it. The mythology of low-fat diets are a huge component of why we are so ill now, okay? But there's more to it than that. And I do want people, because when weight is one of those things that people are unkind to themselves about. And you cannot treat it if you're being unkind to yourself, if you aren't experiencing love for yourself and others, compassion for yourself and others. And because whatever that body looks like, it's the same person, truly, whether they're 100 pounds heavier or 100 pounds lighter. Now, are there certain medical conditions associated with being 100 pounds heavier? Of course there is. I mean, I'm not trying to say different than that, just like, but it's the same thing, the smoker versus non-smoker. It's an unhealthier choice, but they're not bad people. It's just making a choice to smoke, okay? Now, are we really choosing? Because that's the question that always comes to my mind. You know, because we did this battle every day. More cigarettes are being sold in this world every day, okay? So intelligence isn't enough to keep us from stopping smoking, because these are in third world countries, the rate of smoking is coming down in our country. I get that, okay? But worldwide, we're smoking more than ever. Now, are we really that stupid? I mean, that's a legitimate question. When you see that, you have to say, wow, is that a form of stupidity? No, I don't think we're that stupid. I think there's something going on where we're choosing certain addictions, smoking, eating, etc., and we're never dealing with what the real problem is. And until that is dealt with, because that's always been my experience, the how many people have come to me from the Betty Fords or whatever else, I mean, they're drinking on the way home from this elaborate and intellectual understanding of what alcoholism is, and they're drinking like almost instantaneously, okay? These are very smart people. I want to emphasize this, okay? So what is it? There has to be something past our intelligence that's keeping us doing these things. There has to be. There's no way to look at the evidence and not come to that conclusion, okay? So if you say, gosh, how many people, I've tried every diet, I've tried all these other things, there's got to be some other imbalance. Neutral self-inquiry. What is the nature of who I am? What is the nature of love? Because these things are much more important than weighing less. But you ask some people and weigh that extra 10 pounds or whatever it is can be like life-altering to them. And that's a tremendous misunderstanding of self and what really we're made of. So look at this basic concept of what is compassion now and doing unto others what you'd have them do to you, basic principles, especially doing unto yourself what you would have others do unto you. Self-critical perfectionism, one of the worst diseases that we face today, especially among women. Okay, and this loss of sense of self, true love, true compassion, agape love, to me has to be a component of it, because the symptom sets, finding things outside of ourselves to treat something that it cannot treat is what the disease we're facing right now. And so, and whether the person turns to alcohol, World of Warcraft, food, doesn't really matter. We're missing the underlying point. Something has us riled and we're not doing well with it because I don't think we're looking deep enough. I think empathy, the ability to recognize and share feelings with others is an important part of developing compassion. Sympathy, acting on it. These other things come in. Freedom, free will, the ability to make choices. Okay, now these are Wikipedia definitions. I'll get into my definitions. I'm going to propose to you, most of you are very socially conditioned and very rarely are making your own decisions. You're making decisions based upon, and I can show you gobs of data, based upon a conditioning that has not necessarily been the best for your own health. how much freedom you actually have. This country, which according to the great traditions was supposed to be here in the West, where we could take care of basic physical needs and actually make this exploration of who we are, what really is to be human, okay, I don't think we're making very much. And we're kind of superficially treating symptoms, not treating diseases. And so, because it's going to be a lot more difficult, forcing yourself to eat one more calorie, well, excuse me, one less calorie, whatever else as far as to lose weight, doesn't work long term. There's got to be something we're missing. My definition, self-love, awareness of who you are beyond the mask of social conditioning, acceptance of the true self, and a desire to see the physical, emotional, intellectual self reflect that true self. There's the biggest joke is that we ever need a self-help section in the library. That your self needs help is laughable. Self-image, now that's something they can use work on. Okay? But this true self, the loss of connection with self, when we get into our stress management, why I consider that so important, because this happens all the time. I saw a guy, I feel rudderless in his life. Okay, none of us experienced that in our life. This is a patient. And he doesn't realize he's the one holding the rudder, you know, but he isn't rudderless. It's in a feeling that he has. My thoughts are running away with me. Well, again, you're the thinker of your thoughts. My thoughts are running away with me. Therefore, you have you running away with you. Doesn't sound like a good situation. Okay? And so most of us experience this. These are the things that make us feel dis-ease, so we choose a distraction to take us away from our lives. Connection with self, absolutely an imperative in anybody who wants to lose weight. It's the one thing you don't see anybody ever trying, actually. Okay, I've been on 100 diets, so I'm not going to try this. Okay, well, let's try 101 diets and see how that works. That'll do that. Kind of funny, you know. And so this law of least effort, please look at this. This is modified from Chopra, 7 Spiritual Laws of Success. Okay, acceptance of the moment exactly as it is. You are this weight. You're not good. It's not bad. It's weight. What's going on? Responsibility. The ability to respond creatively to any situation, looking forward to the future as the opposite response to guilt, blame, and shame. I am going to take responsibility for my health. And in no way does that make me guilty, feel blame, or any of these things. Whether this is because, whether you're an alcoholic, a smoker, an overeater, whatever it is, your body's printing out in a certain way. Huh, the isn't says that I have 100 extra pounds. Okay. All right, that's the way it is today. And railing against it, making yourself feel bad about it, is what creates you getting more weight. Okay? So railing against it is part of your disease process. Okay? Acceptance is your only choice. This tilting at windmills line, you tilting at the reality of nature is one of the greatest causes of fatigue. So seeing the reality of nature. My favorite meditation instructor is Adyashanti. It says the goal of meditation, which is kind of funny, which is to see everything exactly as it is, no manipulation. Seeing everything exactly as it is according to the Greek system, why we're in human form, shamanic healing, etc. This body is a divine human birth. That's another system. So there's something about being in this body that's really a wonderful thing. Be kind to it, no matter how bad you've been. Okay. Defenselessness, needing not to prove oneself right or others wrong, okay, and especially or yourself wrong. Okay, many people are in that cycle. Please look at this. I cannot emphasize this enough. This is so much more important to me than doing supplements. Okay, I like supplements. Everybody knows that, and I like eating right. I think that's a wonderful thing. The reason people are diseased is because primarily the loss of true connection. Spirit, mind, body medicine, true integrative medicine, which is an integration of thyself. Okay, that is why we're so dysfunctional. And it's a learned process. If you don't take time, spending time with self, the world draws you out into the Maya, the illusion, okay, of physicality, everything else. Okay, so please, the world is meant to make you live the illusion instead of the truth. So, and that's why we're so, and that's the key. Is that most people who are searching, they just aren't looking in the right place. Obesity is a condition through the misperception of the self, misunderstanding of agape, compassion, freedom, entitlement, has led the body to accumulating excess fat. This is my definition, obviously. Okay, so primarily a disease of loss of connection with self. Okay, any myriad of diseases can follow, hypertension, diabetes, cancers, etc. To me, when your body is printing out in a way that you say, gosh, I don't want that, it's the same thing as saying, my thoughts are running away with me, which is, wow, I've lost connection with who I am. That's the primary disease, and that's the primary disease of our world today. And so, and there's rampant. That's the problem with information technology. It is so much more difficult nowadays. Kids do not go outside the way we used to. I mean, they go online and they think there's so much more fascinating distractions nowadays than there ever has been. So it is a powerful influence on what's happening to all of us, not just our kids. And this internet takes us so far away from being connected. It's not even close. It's a great place for information, don't get me wrong. Sometimes it's a great place for misinformation too if you go to the wrong places. But look, I challenge you to look at, if you have a condition and you said, I've tried dieting, I've tried all these other things, this is the first place I would look at, is this section. I could, you know, spend a long time on this, but who are you? Okay. And then really becoming comfortable with this self. Okay. And even if this body ain't printing out the way you want it to, you realize at some level, wow, no matter what this body is printing out, I'm pretty cool. Okay, and if you can come to that truth and they say, realize a healthy connection would mean my body will print out closer to what my body type is. And we do have different body types. We'd have different personality types. And so are some people going to be naturally a little heavier or curvier? Yes, and it's okay. Now, within realms, and there's good numbers for this. So my definition of obesity is this, and this is the definition of obesity from a standard medical standpoint. We've got our base body mass index, take our weight in pounds, use this formula. If I'm 25 to 30, I am basically considered overweight. If I'm over 30, then I am obese. And that is a much more concrete definition, and you can get much better data on it. Okay, my definition is completely unprovable. Okay, and nor am I expecting anybody to accept it as truth. I would just look at it as, is there truth in there for you? Because this is all about eating less calories, exercising more, etc. And I love the data on this stuff. I want you to hear about this, okay? And look at what are the things that cause us to do something. But it's just like there's such a perfect correlation with global warming, with debt, with obesity and other things. It's a bigger, deeper wound that we're really talking about. And until we talk about making all of these things, correcting ourselves at a deeper level, the symptom, plugging away on one symptom, obesity in this case, is not going to cure the real underlying disorder. Which I think you guys get, that's really where I'm at. And so, if we, and now, this is a series of things that really goes into the data in terms of the obesity trends. And I'm going to skip over a few things just for, but this is all going to be on the website. Mississippi has the highest rate of obesity. This is just obesity, not overweight and obesity, okay? Overweight and obesity is another subject, so we'll stick with just obesity for the time being. 34.4%, Colorado at 19.8%. All the diseases associated with it are going up. I'm going to get to some graphs. This is 1991, okay? How long ago that was, right? 20 years ago. So these data, this is looking at the rates of obesity in all the states of our country. Okay, and just simple things that have occurred in the last 20 years. This is a graph greater than 30%, 25 to 30. You can see there's no reason for this yet. We're only over in this category just 20 years ago. These data, there just wasn't enough data for whatever reason there. And looking at the rates of obesity from 91 to 93, 95 combined data. Okay, and we can see already a shift occurring in terms of obesity. And going from, in this case, 10 to 15%, which are these states, 10 to 15% is these states, okay? 15 to 20% here. Moving on, and this is how much we've changed. And I want to emphasize this state here, and if we just go back to 20 years ago, actually just 15 years ago, this state was still the most obese state in our country at that time. 20 years later, this state would be the least obese state of today. In just 20 years' time. So that's 1991 Mississippi, we transposed it to now, would be the least obese state in our country. Isn't that astounding? That's how much obesity has changed in 20 years. Now, again, there's no way to get around it. This is the time where so many things have occurred. So make it just about diet. This is the verge of the internet era and gaming and all kinds of other things. And this is when the low-fat diets really kicked in as a mythology, not to eat fat, to sell cholesterol drugs. And people switched to no-fat, low-fat, highly increased calories, pounded carbs into their body, high insulin levels, and led to all of this just because of one mythology meant to sell you cholesterol medicines that was completely inaccurate from the get-go, had to be wrong. Okay, and so this is then the outcome. And I want you to know that everybody who told you to do the food pyramid a long time ago knew that it wasn't based in reality. Everybody who knew that fats weren't bad for you told you to do that anyways. So you also have to look at who you're listening to. Am I watching a news network telling me global warming doesn't exist? Am I watching a news network that promotes fear and hate through misinformation to create a sense of fear and loathing in myself that creates these very problems? Am I doing that? Because that is part of our disease state, okay? And if you don't correct those problems, that's why people don't like it when I talk about certain news and other things. If you don't stop watching that, you have to be diseased. There's no way around it because it's there to promote the very disease. Because this model is one of the best models of creating disease, functionally diseased people to feed a certain percentage of our population, okay? But you cannot argue with this data, okay? And so the same data is there. So this obesity rate is astounding and unprecedented. Obesity rates in our country from 1920, basically, until 1980 were exactly flat. There wasn't any change. So something has occurred. We didn't change genetically. Okay? So get over that one. Okay? And responsibility does not mean feeling guilty about this, but something has occurred. States with the highest obesity rate, just a very simple, the South. Michigan's trying to catch up. I don't know what the Michiganers are doing, but they're... and this is, remember, just obesity. And this is the highest rated countries, states. States with the lowest obesity rate, there's one very interesting one, which is D.C., which there's high rates of poverty and things that should be actually a fairly obese from a lot of standpoints, but they especially excel in physical activity for some reason. And this does modify some things. It's a multifactorial process. Why are we so... obese, partly due to inactivity, partly due to processed foods, and partly due to the stress thing, and there's some combination thereof. And so Colorado being the lowest, see these other things in the north, I'm going to go by a few of the things. This is on a graph, so I want to show this to you. Households, incomes, okay, so please notice if having a higher income is associated with a dramatic lower weight, okay, so now why those socioeconomic factors are there, we can go on about that, but a lot of it has to do with did not graduate high school, 32.8% obese, okay? Graduated high school, 30%, 29%, 21%. Do you notice there's a big movement in certain organizations to keep you from being educated, okay? And that's not for your own health, okay? There's many things and policies in place to make sure that the very richest get richer and the poorest get poorer. Those policies are still going on, and that's part of this problem. States with the highest poverty rating, D.C. is one of them, okay? But the one thing I tell you is the lowest poverty rating is associated with less problems with obesity, more consistently with having poverty. Physical inactivity is one of the things. I want to get to this slide. So, in terms of this, not being physically active is one of the greatest predictors for being obese. I think that's a fairly obvious thing. So, can you get to optimal weight without an exercise program? No. I would say that is a truth. Now, is it possible? People can be thin but be unhealthy. So I'm talking about optimal weight in terms of good lean body mass, because just being wafer thin is not healthy. Okay. So there is a problem with what they call sarcopenia, which basically loss of good lean body mass. So again, you can eat in a certain way. Or if you're not physically active, you don't have the lean body mass to be well, because your lean body... Your muscular tissue, even the fatty tissue, they're metabolically active tissues. So if you have loss of lean body mass, it has a lot of effects on all kinds of hormonal functions, and it's unhealthy, okay? And so look at this. Huh, do I have an exercise routine? Because, man, that's highly predictive of people being inactive, being obese, active, not being obese. And again, lowest rates of physical inactivity associated with, you know, obesity ranking, so the states with the lowest rate of physical activity, meaning they're exercising more. Notice D.C. is one of those things where even though they have poverty, for some reason they really have a good rate of exercise, meaning a low rate of physical inactivity, and therefore that helps protect them for some reason in terms of obesity. And again, this is the stat I get the credit 15 years ago, not even 20 years ago. Mississippi at the highest obesity rating at 19.4%, which is lower than the current best state of today, Colorado. 15 years. If you don't think this is an epidemic, and if you don't head on charge right into it, you are sadly mistaken. This is an epidemic. Okay. 20 years ago, the state with the highest combined obesity plus overweight, that's a BMI of 25 to 29.9, 30 and above, was 49%. 10 years ago, only two states had a rate above 60%. Now, the lowest rate is 54.8%. 44 states are above 60%. Okay. 10 years. 20 years time, excuse me. 20 years time from 49% being the highest to now almost the entire country over 60%. Astounding. Hypertension follows with it. Diabetes follows. 10 years ago, no state had an obesity rate above 24%. So this is an accelerating problem is where I'm going with this too. 10 years ago, okay, no state had an obesity rate above 24%. Now 43 states have higher obesity rates than this. 43. That's how much has changed in just 10 years. This is a problem. Like any chronic toxicity, it's tough for us to figure out that smoking was causing us a problem because so many people were doing it and then said, wow, I guess it really is, okay? The way we shifted in eating in the 80s towards eating highly processed carbohydrate diets, dramatically death-causing. Okay, it's one of the most lethal things we can do. And you can make an argument it's even worse for you than smoking. Okay, and when we talk about and I actually use this example for many people, think of the grains and the glues of the world going into you as a true toxin. Some people can survive it, yes, and you can do things to get past it, but it's like very difficult to suggest any good amount of smoking to people. It's good, very difficult to suggest any of these foods to anybody. Can you survive it? Yes, your body's amazing. We already came up discussed that. Now, states with the lowest adult fruit and vegetable consumption and where they rate in obesity. So carbs are not bad for you. Remember, if we eat carbohydrates, it's a sign of plenty to the body. It leads to insulin release, which its primary job is to store onto fat. It's very difficult to eat enough fruits and vegetables to get enough insulin release to cause obesity. So fruits and vegetables are not only associated with lower rates of obesity, and they are carbohydrates. So once again, the idea that carbs are bad for us is absolutely inaccurate. Okay? Healthy carbohydrates in the form of fruits and vegetables are wonderfully and strongly associated with being healthy. Any other form of carbohydrate is associated with just the opposite. So I'd look at that data. The more exercise I do, the more I can get away with certain grains and other things, but most of us aren't doing that. And states with the highest adult and where they rate in obesity. So, breastfeeding is one of those things where the highest rates of exclusive breastfeeding associated with not being obese, something about breastfeeding is strongly associated with being healthier throughout the rest of the life. I can go on and on, but breastfeeding is good for your baby, long and short of it. Shock. We're mammals. So a mammal doing mammalian things is good for you, huh? Ooh, wow, who would have guessed? You know? I mean, some of the stuff shouldn't be really rocket science to us, but, you know. So it's a really straightforward thing is you do something natural. And I always tell people, every time we substitute something unnatural for something in nature, you know, margarine for butter, artificial sweeteners for sweet, it's always been, always, 100% so far, okay? So not using breast milk and using something else has always been associated with bad outcomes. Can some kids survive it? Of course, we're resilient organisms. I'm not going to go too much into this, but I do want you to look at the slides and look at where we're at in terms of what happened when certain policies shifted in terms of help favoring the top 1% and having them feed off of us, and they continue on independent of whatever party. There was a little shift there in terms of where we're going with debt, Paul, and this directly correlates in this risk of growing entitlement spending. What do we expect from the world? What do we expect from ourselves? What's happened to our household incomes? I have to go. And what's happened to the top 1% who are feeding off of you? Who know about all these things and don't do them? Okay? Because our current policy is to select out a certain population of people and the rest of us become programmed automatons who eat a certain way and do things and we have no freedom. And that's part of the reason. Until you know thyself, experience silence, you have no free will. according to every tradition. So developing free will would be a very powerful thing here, because every time you really think you're treating yourself with that treat, something else is going on. I just propose that to you as a truth. Okay? And this is a pretty dramatic talk about what's happened in the last, since 91 on, this dramatic change that's occurred in terms of the top feeding off of us and nothing else happening to our other income. A household credit card debt as a symptom of the same problem. Eating, when you aren't in the metabolic situation to take that calorie on, is the same thing as buying shoes when you don't have the money to do it. You have been taught to put, and if you don't, you have been taught to just put it on your credit card. Okay. From 1980 on, a shift has occurred to make people more imprisoned, which is called credit card debt. Okay. And this directly correlates with the rate of obesity too, by the way. Okay. Spending money that you don't have is the same thing as eating calories you do not need. There's just different diseases that come out of it. Okay. So look at the correlations and what's going on. There's a deeper wound and that's going on for people, and it manifests in different ways. I'm not saying everybody who has credit card debt is obese, because I don't know those numbers. Just saying it's the same basic problems going on as we are, and this goes into the entitlement aspects of things. It's, and what people, and this is the key aspect of what I'm talking about. Nobody's saying those shoes aren't pretty. Nobody's saying you don't deserve them. However, if you can't afford them, you do not buy them. Okay. Now, nobody says you don't deserve, after a hard day, some calories or whatever else. However, if you're 100 pounds overweight, you don't deserve that. Okay. It's not about your goodness, your badness, or anything else. It's this idea that we're entitled to that is really kind of the disease we're talking about. And whether we're just, I deserve the shoes, you can't even say Twinkies anymore. I always used to say Twinkies. The whatever it is, okay? That's what we're actually dealing with, is we're treating something, whether with the shoes or with the Twinkies, that cannot treat the underlying problem. It feels good for us a little bit. I'm not arguing against that. Of course it feels good to have the wet ice cream, okay? And it tastes good, and it harkens you back to a kid, and then you got an ice cream, and you're with a family, and it feels good, and there's all these social interconnections and things. I'm not saying that is even wrong. I'm just saying that I am in the position to buy that, and when I say buy that ice cream, because you're putting it onto yourself, you're buying it essentially. So look at it from that standpoint. But remember, it's not about right or wrong, but it's not about you deserving it either. Well, my friend Jimmy had a tough day, and, you know, Jimmy got to get ice cream. Well, that's great and all, but Jimmy's at a good weight and can handle that or whatever is going on. It's a different metabolic position. Can you see the truth of that is what I'm asking of you? And if you can't, that's okay. But please look at this debt, the debt we're accumulating, and how it directly correlates with the problem I'm talking about, because it's something deeper. So, time is it? All right. Remember, in terms of approaching this, I hope you understand, like I said, I am much more interested. I know that's a bit of a downer stuff there. I took out all the stuff on global warming that directly correlates with this, too, because that would have been too much to do. Climate change, whatever term you want to use, but it's similar in terms of how we, the global warming aspect, the environment is your extended body, okay? If you mistreat that, you will mistreat you. It's a very simple equation. Okay, so, and all this directly correlates. There's a deeper wound going on. So what is my own personal wound? We know what can be going on there, but there's something going on where at an epidemic rate, we are choosing things in a way that is extraordinarily unhealthy for us. That's really what's most interesting to me. Because unless you find out personally your truth through journaling, self-inquiry, through meditative practice, through those things, you never will get to the root of why you're choosing those foods that sometimes you know you don't need, even though it feels like you need them, okay? That's really what I'm interested in, and it's going to be different for each one of you, okay? And that's the key, and if you see that, but remember about compassion and empathy for the politicians who are still in this policy of doing this and spending, they're just doing the same thing we're doing when we're eating the ice cream. It just looks different, okay? And all this stuff gives, and I hope you understand, that's the greatest part of this, is to have love and compassion for anybody involved in all these things, because most people are fairly unconscious about how they're doing these things. And the last thing we need is anybody hating any on anybody else for any other reason in this world. There's enough of that going on, enough belief systems about making that occur. We're just trying to see the truth of things without manipulating them and say, huh, I wonder if I can do this in a different way. Okay? Now, my basic things. I have a Foundations of Health. It's on the website. I need to revise it, though. and basic nutritional protocol. If you're breathing, multi, fish oils, vitamin D. If you're losing weight, probiotics. Okay, so these are all talks in and of themselves, so I can't, but give yourself the metabolic support. Now, this is on the weight loss part of things, not the detox part of things. When you do a detox program, you do whatever detox supplements you do, try to stay off other supplements. When you're on just the normal part of your lifestyle, this is where you go into these basic protocols. This is a book I recommend to everybody, okay? It looks at the multifactorial process of being human called Transcend. It's an acronym standing for talk with your doctor, relaxation, I call stress management, assessment, measure stuff, and nutrition, supplements, calorie restriction, exercise, new technologies, and detoxification. It's just a way of formulating your approach towards your health. I like it because it's the first time I've actually recommended a book on general health to people. Okay, it's like 10 bucks paperback these days or something like that. And no, it doesn't have all the answers, but let you know this. Remember, detoxing isn't all you can do. Calorie restriction isn't the only thing you can do. Exercise isn't the only... You have to be, in our own life, we have to be integrally informed, okay, informed about all these things, and apply all of these things into our own life, just the way it is. And so... stress management, we've talked again, that's a whole series of talks. This will be up there. Whether you do mantra-based meditation, like the one I've taught, transcendental meditation, John Freeman's awesome, Sinead John's great too. You do biofeedback technology, HeartMath. This is a binaural beat technology. It's another thing, but it's enhanced meditative states through using music, essentially we'll call it. Okay. There's so many ways. Remember, the best way to meditate, the one you'll do. Best way to exercise? The one you'll do. Okay. Best way to detox? The one you'll do. How will you know which one you'll do? Because you're the one doing it. Okay? It's really straightforward. Experiential knowingness, people. And not getting worried about whether someone's detox program is better than yours. Because it's not a competition. Okay? The one you'll do is the one to do. Okay? The exercise. I cannot emphasize this enough. Especially, look, there's three levels of fitness. That's what's in the Foundations of Health. Start with Tai Chi, yoga, stretching, physical awareness of the body, aerobic conditioning, resistance conditioning. All three levels of fitness are extraordinarily important in your vibrant wellness, okay, not just optimal weight. Interval training, very briefly, fast twitch muscle fibers dispose of glucose and insulin much faster than slow twitch fibers. So interval training, intense exercise rest. Much better way of training the muscles to develop fast twitch fibers. Bump, a bump, a bump on the treadmill gets you very lean, efficient muscles, which is great if you're running marathons, not so good if you're trying to help get to optimal weight. So interval training is key. There's these insanity workouts and things I have. I'm not saying they're great because I don't know them, but the basic principle of doing intensity versus long lengths of time, that is a truth. The paleo primal principles, there's whole talks on this, okay? My experience so far is about 95% of people respond really, really well to this. And whether that's treating their arthritis, treating their brain fogs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The basic principle of not eating sugars, processed foods and sugars, grains and most beans works dramatically well in most people. Do we have to develop a relationship with our hunger? Yes, because most of us dramatically misinterpret our hunger signals. So when we're losing weight, do we have to understand what healthy hunger is, what abnormal hunger is, what is an appetite, and being aware of that relationship between you and your appetite is a very powerful thing because you don't have to become a slave to it. Sometimes you just have hunger and you let it go and it's fine, you know. And not every call to eat is a call for you to actually eat. It's more of that trigger, I need to comfort something. And you have to determine how to determine what those things are. It's by settling, seeing what the signals are. Basically, if you're losing weight, the program that I recommend, now this is key, there's healthy eating for maintenance, okay? If somebody is losing weight, most systems use some form of meal replacement to help them make decisions, so they don't have to make too many decisions of their own. So they do 1 to 2 meal replacements a day, and that means instead of a breakfast, they eat a protein drink or something. Do you have to do this? No, I'm not saying this is a truth. I'm just saying this is a very useful strategy, because for many people to get overwhelmed with decisions, doing some meal replacements actually makes your life easier, having something to do. These are the ones I recommend. There's stuff over here in terms of if you want to look at. Just put in a scoop of greens along with a couple of scoops of a protein that you like, okay? Maybe some fiber in there to help with overall glycemic levels and things. It makes a very filling drink and a great, you know, can do it for breakfast or lunch or dinner, whatever you prefer. I recommend meal replacements, 1 or 2 a day, as a way to help with getting to optimal weight. And can you continue on with them? I use meal replacements all the time anyway, so I mean, so you can continue on with them as part of your program. Yes?
Do you have meal replacement bars that you can use on lunches if you don't want to drop on the
counter? I am still, even with the stuff we've used in the past, the Ultra Meals and Tempos, there's not a meal replacement bar that I really like, to be quite honest with you. There really isn't. I mean, if you're exercising, some of the things we have are good, but I'd really keep, is there optimal meal replacement bar? I can tell you things wrong with Atkins. I can tell you things wrong with just about everything. I just prefer trail mix. A handful of a good, healthy trail mix is so satisfying, so good. And we talk about what meals to do. I recommend for vegetarians using eggs or dairy. Obviously, that would not work for vegans. Do I recommend veganism long-term? And the answer is I do not. Okay. Am I trying to be right about that? No, I'm just telling you what I don't recommend. The reason I don't recommend veganism is because it's not associated with long-term with any healthy outcome that I'm aware of. And you have to be deficient in DHA. Unless you take a lot of DHA supplements from algae sources, that's one thing you almost can't get in a vegan diet. Now, if somebody feels great with veganism, doesn't mind getting algae sources of DHA, that can be a very healthy way of being. It can be. I'm not trying to say different. It's just not a truth that being vegan is healthier than not being vegan. Okay? It's not an untruth. If it's your remember, if it's your personal truth, please live with that. Snacks, and this goes into snacks. I prefer using a handful of trail mix or, you know, almond butter on a celery stick or something else like that, a couple of sticks of that. That's so good, so healthy. I prefer that to any of the meal replacement bars, to be quite honest with you. Drink water. Stevia really is the only acceptable sweetener. There's no such thing. Those stevia baking things are just maltodextrins, which is a bunch of carbohydrates, which is really just the same thing. Maltodextrin is just going to be converted into sugar as fast as sugar, so you might as well just put sugar in as compared to the stevia baking things, from my perspective. Okay. And this goes into, do I recommend most people getting away from sweets? Yes, because everything in our food supply is so naturally sweet, I don't think we need to be adding too many sweeteners. And then you get then there's lots of good things. If you like honey or if you like gray bee maple syrup, those are good things to use if you're substituting it for certain baking things. Yes? Gluten's I really truly look at like cigarette smoke. An occasional stogie here and there is probably safe, an occasional muffin here and there is probably fine. Okay, but it's truly, when I put super glue on your arm and rip it off, you're not allergic to it. It's just that glue in human bodies does not work. And that's what gluten's are. Okay, and so physically speaking, they cannot be good for you. Can some people survive them better than others? Some people can smoke 2 packs a day and go on for 50 years. That's basically my understanding of glutens. So do I want anything that goes in there and disrupts my microvilli and distorts the problem? Digestive problems are such a huge issue in our society. I have a whole presentation on digestive difficulties. We need to sit down, eat slowly, eat consciously. Do many people need digestive enzymes? Yes. Do many people need probiotics to help balance their flora? That's a huge part of this food sensitivity weight issue that is its own subject. Now, back to what I was saying. If you go on and you experience time away from glutens, okay, and it is a truth for you that when you eat rye bread, I'll just use whatever it came to my head there, and you say, no, I really do better with this. Would I listen to that and not me? Yes. I really mean that in all sincerity, by the way. I mean, so on that order, it is if you organically raise and are of Swedish heritage and other types of things, there's no doubt that you'll do better with glutens than other populations. The Swedes love it. Yay. And if you're Polynesian, better with rice. I could go on and on about these variations. But the point is that I recommend for anybody, if they have any symptomatology, just do 3 weeks without any of this stuff. And then when you introduce rice if you want, rye if you want, whatever else, listen to your own body, okay? And yes, it might be the best thing for you. And that's when I would step away from it and say, no, my body's telling me I feel best, most vibrant when I eat rye bread. I'm just, whatever, you know, you get the idea, oatmeal. Because at that point, it's no longer a belief system. I want them to get away from just thinking paleo, and it has to be wrong. But is it statistically likely that rye bread is going to be the right thing? No. It's just not statistically likely.
What about birch xylitol for a sweetener?
Once you get xylitol, whether the source, you still are left with a sugar alcohol known as xylitol. Okay. Xylitol is still a carbohydrate. It's better metabolically speaking. I know I got to finish up. But again, for like me, like a lot of people, it's very gas forming and things like that. So there's a tolerance issue that can be with that. And I still get away from trying to avoid sweeteners as much as possible. Is it a good one to use when you're celebrating and doing things? Wonderful birthday cakes and things like that. Those are great things to use. I'm not saying not to have occasional sweets like that. I mean, I think that's a great thing to do. We're trying to get away from the daily practice. Get sleep, basic nutritional protocol, take probiotics. There's some supplements we have up here we can talk about. Are there some supplements that can support optimal weight? Yes. Okay, I'm not trying to tell you you cannot take them. And so the model today, using the disease model, okay, is that the obesity is a chronic disease, therefore you need a chronic treatment for it. You know there's so many drugs coming out that everybody's trying to use. They just don't work long term. So, subsequently speaking, could you take something with 7 keto, like a pure whey, or take whey level, which is a combination that's been shown to be thermogenic, etc., and have some trials on these things? Most of the research on this stuff is very superficial. Even the ones with double-blind trials, there's a very small number involved in these things. So I'm not trying to make any of the stuff that we use a truth. But back to the human model, taking an active role in your healing is important. If taking a supplement seems like an important thing to you, it probably is, and I would do it. These are good choices. I like the saunas. Guidance with your physician. Keep track and do doable goals. Doable goals. This is just like, I've got to pay off my debt. This is my plan. This is how much I'm paying off. I've got to pay off this debt. Your debt is 100 pounds. Don't look at it 100 pounds because, like most debts, you don't want to go, oh, my God, I can never pay that off. It's very difficult to pay off 100 pounds, okay? So if you look at it from that perspective, bring it down to the first 5, okay? And then the next 5, and then the next 5. This is a standard business model, and you come up with ways to get there, and you make it that important to yourself. If you do not develop a sense of urgency for weight loss, it does not get done. So a sense of urgency has to be a part of the problem, part of what you talk about, because, no, is it really urgent that in 2 weeks you weigh 5 pounds less? No. Let's face it. But if you don't make it urgent, that 5 pounds never comes off. Okay, so you better make it urgent. And this back goes into the idea, because this sounds harsh sometimes when we talk about, I have a debt that I need to pay. Okay, so, and what I'm talking about is, yes, you have to look at this. It's not about you not being worthy because you don't get ice cream as much, not being as good a person if you don't do whatever. It's all about, I've accumulated a little bit of a debt. I better probably pay that off. And then in the future, I can have a few more intolerances. But no, just like I wouldn't buy, you deserve the shoes, but if you can't afford them, please don't buy them. Because you imprisoning yourself with credit card debt is one of the ways that we especially imprison the female population through fashion and those types of things. And when I talk about this imprisonment and things, it is that. There's a social order thing that's going on that most people don't want to see. And I'm talking about, do you really have free will in the choices that you're making? And most of the time, people aren't making choices out of free will. They're basically being pushed and having a choice that they make. And it's pretty predictable which one you're going to choose. Okay. And so that's why it's very important for us to look at a much deeper level in terms of treating from that standpoint. And remember the basic principles, no matter what size you are, what size someone else is, no matter what color, creed, whatever else, compassion, love, caringness, especially for yourself. Okay. And if you don't have that feeling inside, then you will make decisions that will usually cause short-term comfort, long-term disease. Any final questions? I've got to finish. Yes?
What about the idea of going back to what you were saying earlier about the self-love and changing all aspects of your life? And what about the idea of having, sure you have that goal, but that's not the focus? It's like that note to be observed.
Right. I think what I talk about is there's two schools in this world tend to be process orientation. I'm going to go out and think like versus goal orientation. There's a value to both of them. Okay. And is the process as important, if not more important than the goal? And you can argue, we could argue this back and forth, you know. And by the way, argument is a wonderful thing. Argument in Greek cultures was coming to a greater understanding of the truth, okay? And I think argument's a wonderful thing if that's what you're looking for in a conversation, okay? And I hope we understand that. Today's world of argument is about proving other people wrong, okay? So now, back to this. There's both. If somebody has 100 extra pounds and they say, well, I feel really good about myself when I'm eating this way, and they're gaining another 5 pounds, you have to be careful about that error, okay? Because process is important, but you've got to have goals too. I'm just using 100 pounds, 50, whatever it is, okay? So yes, is the process important? How you lose weight? Because no, if somebody goes on Ensure and whatever else and eats horribly, they can lose lean body mass and get to certain goals and at a certain point and not have a good process. That's why I'm saying it's both important to have a healthy process like we're talking about, starting with a foundation of self-love, caring for others, recognizing that when we're treating ourselves, often we're really not treating the underlying problem, we're just giving ourselves a Twinkie to placate a problem, okay, or taking an acid. And then we have to combine both the process with the goal, because unfortunately sometimes, and this is true especially at Deepak's organization, you know, when I spent time with the Chopra organization, everybody was always really happy and nothing was getting done, or everybody was really miserable and a lot was getting done. And they, even within their organization, they had trouble finding that balance between process and goals. Okay? And in our life, you'll find the same thing is true. So I do honor what you're saying. There is a lot of truth to that. Can we get obsessed with the number? Yes. But at some point, most people have an idea. I felt healthiest when I weighed this. Okay, good. So, because the key is to be healthy, remember? And the weight is a part of it. And you have to be careful about making that the only thing and the everything. I agree. But there has to be both a process orientation and a goal orientation. And you see, in every organization, I see that problem come about. Too goal-oriented or too process-oriented. And everybody I know who's tried this have trouble balancing the two. So. Yes. She'll talk to you about the actualities of things. I mean, there's part we do, just talk to the community. And remember, all I ask of people when I do something like this is, don't accept what I say is true, but please accept the possibility of what I'm saying as being true. Okay? And then see if it works for you. Not anything any one speaker will ever say is 100% truth. And I'm not saying I therefore somehow have an exclusionary principle. Everybody but me. So you have to look and see which one of these things work for you. That's the challenge for you. The data that I'm showing you, whether you look at data for spending, global warming, obesity, means what we're doing isn't working. That you can't come to a different conclusion to. So then, I got to try something different. Most everybody in the last 20 years that I know have tried every diet, tried every movement, and things like that. So something else has to occur than just saying, I'm going to eat this way. It has to be deeper than that. Even paleo, yes. Okay. All right. And so Uta's back there. She's a nutritionist who works with us. Can Could you say it one more time? I didn't.
Hungry for change.
Hungry for change? Okay.
I actually have it in my newsletter this month.
Okay. Well, it sounds a lot like what I'm talking about, because I'm not the only person coming to these conclusions, nor am I pretending to be, by the way. So that's what I'm trying to say. There's a lot of other people that really kind of, you can't look at the data and not come to a deeper conclusion. I mean, objectively speaking. And so that's why we have to come to a different conclusion and approach it from a different way. If there's any other things about supplements, please ask up here. Any questions for me? I'll turn off the microphone without making that god-awful sound. And so, and we'll go from there. Thank you, everyone. Please don't forget Make-A-Wish Foundation and talk to Rich.